Shabbat Shalom, everyone. You may be seated. Today, I want to talk about the wonder of motherhood, the wonder of motherhood. Because motherhood is so wonderful, powerful, and beautiful, it is universally understood by all human beings in all cultures, in all places, and in every generation from time immemorial. Today, we will look at one of the mothers mentioned in the scriptures. Like all mothers, she is faced with many challenges and yet overcomes them by her faith in God. She is one of the many mothers of the Bible who are presented as role models for all women who become mothers. To all our mothers, we say with resounding joy, utmost respect, honor, and with our deepest gratitude, happy Mother's Day. You are loved, cherished, and indispensable to our community. Thank you for who you are as a mother. So today we're going to look at the life of the mother who gave birth to the greatest of all the prophets. Her name is Elizabeth. She's the mother of John the Immerser, who came in the spirit of Elijah, the one chosen by God to be the forerunner of his only begotten Son, Jesus, the Messiah. I looked at a number of different women in the Bible to try to choose who to bring in terms of this teaching. And I really wanted to go with Mary, but everyone was telling me, no, she's like, you know, she's like the ultimate, the ideal. No one will rise to the level of Miriam, the mother of Yeshua. So I kind of backed off, but beautiful picture of motherhood in the mother of Jesus. Suffice it to say, I chose a relative, her relative, Elizabeth, who gives birth to the greatest of all the prophets. Let's pick up the reading in Luke chapter 1, and we'll work our way down, starting in verse 5. In the days of Herod, king of Judah, there was a priest named Zacharias of the division of Abijah, and he had a wife from the daughters of Aaron. Her name was Elizabeth. Verse 6. They were both righteous in the sight of God, walking blamelessly in all the commandments and requirements of the Lord. Did you note that? Righteous in the sight of God. Righteous doesn't mean perfect. Righteous doesn't mean without sin, right? They walked blamelessly in all the commandments. What that means is when they sinned, they made sacrifices. That was a provision for sin in the Torah. They're not saying this is a perfect couple. They're saying it's a responsible couple that deals responsibly with their brokenness and lives in harmony with the one who gave us life and his Torah. So they're a pretty solid couple. Is there a reward in being good? Is there blessing for those who are right with God and right with each other? Perhaps the reward in doing good is in the doing and not in receiving. Because we see example after example after example of people like this who somehow miss the reward, who go through extreme trials and tribulations in spite of being right with each other and with God. It's somewhat of a paradox. It's true, and yet there are times in which it looks utterly untrue. Luke chapter 1, verse 7. But they had no child. But in contrast to their relationship with God, which was right as rain, they had no child. And we'll talk about that in a moment, why that is a big thing. But they had no child because Elizabeth was barren and they were both advanced in years. In biblical times, and until relatively recently, bearing children was highly valued. A woman's primary role was that of a mother. Birthing and raising children, however, were fraught with risks. In biblical times in the ancient Near East, only half of all children born survived to the age of five due to the high rates of maternal death in childhood and infant mortality. Can you imagine that? You know what that means? A whole lot of women died in giving birth in the ancient world. It was a very frightening thing to come to that point in which you went into labor and were going to give birth. And then to think of the children that are born, and that half would perish before they were 5 years old. I don't think there's anything more gut-wrenching for a mother than to bury her child. It's just not the way it's supposed to happen. Barrenness was considered a curse. Often women in ancient Israel suffered deep shame as a consequence of barrenness, as it was attributed to some hidden wrong, sin, or flaw. It was understood that ultimately fertility was the blessing of God. He opens and closes the womb. Remember Rachel. She was barren, married to Jacob. She says to her, after years of barrenness, "Give me children or else I die." What is she saying? She's saying, "I'd rather die than be childless. My calling, my virtue is in becoming a mother. And if that's not going to happen, I'd rather die." Jacob responds, "Am I in the place of God who has withheld from you the fruit of the womb?" Jacob here, like so many of the writers, is stating that God is in control of fertility. Ultimately, it belongs to him. And so if you can't conceive, well, maybe you did something, and thus the shame. Now, that's not true, but it's easy to fall in that perception, right? It's easy for others to talk about you behind your back. "Oh, I wonder why she can't conceive." You know, other women that maybe have had two or three children by that time saying, "What's wrong with her? Maybe she has some hidden sin." You can imagine the shame that's associated with that. And that she's crying out, "Give me children or I die." What about Elizabeth? Within this story, as we unpack it, we discover that she has been barren her entire marriage. She's in her later years. They're advanced. They're in their golden era, if you will, right? They're well past their childbearing years, well past that. So all of her marriage, no conception. Surely she has suffered much embarrassment, much confusion, disappointment, and even shame. Even though much has changed today, at least in our circles, barrenness is still confusing, disappointing, and even painful. At this point, there's no other option for her but to simply trust that this barrenness is somehow the will of God for her. It is what it is. However, she does not blame God, and she does not turn away from God in anger or in bitterness. Rather, she stays faithful in the midst of the disappointment, in the midst of the confusion. She stays faithful. She cultivates her faith in God, and it becomes one of her virtues. Luke 1:8-20. Now it happened that while he was performing his priestly service before God in the appointed order of his division, according to the custom of the priestly office, he was chosen by lot to enter the temple of the Lord and burn incense. And the whole multitude of the people were in prayer outside of the hour at the hour of the incense offering. And an angel of the Lord appeared to him standing at the right of the altar of incense. Zacharias was troubled when he saw the angel, and fear gripped him. But the angel said to him, "Do not be afraid, Zacharias, for your petition has been heard, and your wife Elizabeth will bear a son, and you will give him the name John. You will have joy and gladness, and many will rejoice at his birth, for it will be great in the sight of the Lord, and he will drink no wine or liquor. He will be filled with the Holy Spirit while yet in his mother's womb. And he will turn back many of the sons of Israel to the Lord their God. It is he who will go as a forerunner before him in the spirit and power of Elijah to turn the hearts of the fathers back to the children and the disobedient to the attitude of the righteous, so as to make ready a people prepared for the Lord." Zechariah said to the angel, "How will I know this for certain?" Why is he saying that? How do I know this is going to come to pass? What's he say? Read between the lines, right? He's like, "Great news, you're about 30 years too late. We can't even bear children. What are you talking about, right? How do I know this is going to take place when it's over for us? For I'm an old man, my wife is advanced in years." The angel answered and said to him, "I am Gabriel. I am Gabriel, who stands in the presence of God. I have been sent to speak to you to bring you this good news. And behold, you shall be silent and unable to speak until the day when these things take place, because you did not believe my words, the words of Gabriel, who stands in the presence of the Lord," right? "Which will be fulfilled in their proper time." Maybe I'll save him for Father's Day. After these days, Elizabeth, his wife, became pregnant. Have you ever seen like senior citizens pregnant? Anyone? I mean, that would be such a shock, right? To see, you know, think about this. After these days, Elizabeth, his wife, became pregnant. She kept herself in seclusion for 5 months. Wouldn't you? Think about it, right? What's going on with Elizabeth? She stays in hiding. She gets pregnant and she stays in her home. Doesn't go out. Verse 25, "This is the way the Lord has dealt with me in the days when he looked with favor upon me to take away my disgrace among men." She's saying, "I lived in disgrace my whole marriage. I suffered all the gossip, all the pain, all the disappointment. My friends having their children, looking upon me with pity. But now I'm pregnant. It's a miracle. But I will not risk any more shame. I'll wait in my home, in seclusion, in hiding, until I actually have my baby. And then I'm going out to the streets. In that day, I will be honored. My friends will laugh with great joy as they see God's mercy and favor on my life." In this, we see Elizabeth not only fostered the virtue of faithfulness, but also its twin, patience. You see, she waited on the Lord for many, many years. She was patient, willing to bear this burden of barrenness gracefully and faithfully, waiting on the Lord. May his will be done. She had no agenda other than to love and serve God. In this next transition in the story, we have Mary visiting Elizabeth. Now, they are relatives. They're in the same family clan. Elizabeth might be a cousin or more likely an aunt to Mary. And keep in mind who Mary is. She has supernaturally, by the power of the Holy Spirit, conceived in her womb Jesus, who is in fact God. She has conceived in her womb God. Thus, she has become known as Theotokos. That's the Greek word for God-bearer, or more pointedly, Mother of God. Think about that. She bears in her womb the living God who comes to us through this incarnation. Now, I digress, but the ramifications of the virgin birth and who Jesus really is are stunning and staggering, to say the very least. So here she is. Elizabeth encounters her. Elizabeth knows the story, the miraculous intervention, the angel. They both have angelic visitations. Their family, you know, this is spread through their clan. It says, now, at this time, Mary arose and went in a hurry to the hill country, to a city of Judah, and entered the house of Zacharias and greeted Elizabeth. When Elizabeth heard Mary's greeting, the baby leaped in her womb, and Elizabeth was filled with the Holy Spirit. And she cried out with a loud voice. Because when you have the infilling of the Spirit of God at different times, we all know, right? There's just like you can barely contain it. People raise their voice. It's a time of shouting to the Lord and rejoicing, right? So she cries out with a loud voice and says, blessed are you among women, and blessed is the fruit of your womb. And how has it happened to me? The mother of my Lord would come to me. How many people have ever had an audience with the President of the United States, or a king or a queen, or maybe a religious figure like the Pope? Yeah, you just don't get those visitations. Important people don't have time to just meet and greet and schmooze. They basically fill their schedules with only that which is extremely important to them. Their time is very limited. Mary, the Virgin Mother of God, noteworthy in every sense of the word, yet to be discovered in terms of her importance, but nonetheless important to all of heaven. This is the one that God chose. She's carrying God in her womb. And she takes time out to travel and see Elizabeth. And Elizabeth says, what are you doing here visiting me? Who am I that the mother of my Lord should meet me, should come and greet me? Verse 44, for behold, when the sound of your greeting reached my ears, the baby leaped in my womb for joy. As with mother, so with the child in her womb. They are one. Again, in verse 15, speaking of John, who's in Elizabeth's womb, for he will be great in the sight of the Lord. He will drink no liquor or wine, and he will be filled with the Holy Spirit while yet in his mother's womb. Most scholars say the baby's leaping because the Holy Spirit has filled the baby at the same time that it filled Elizabeth. And this is why John's leaping in her womb. Both are filled with the Holy Spirit. Why? Because they've encountered the living God present in the womb of Mary. The proximity, the presence of God ignited within them the infilling of the Spirit of God. Verse 57, now the time had come for Elizabeth to give birth, and she gave birth to a son. I don't even know why I'm talking about this, because I've never experienced it. Because men, contrary to popular belief, cannot give birth to babies, all right? So I don't know about this, other than what I can glean from my wife giving birth to my daughters, but 9 months she carried this child. 9 months of wonder and awe. Childbirth, I believe, is miraculous in every sense. And it is fraught with many existential risks to both the child and the mother. I could tell you stories. You already know stories. My respect for my wife, after I saw the first birth of our first child, zoomed. It changed my relationship with her. It brought a level of respect that I never had. Carrying that child 9 months, all the changes she went through, and then to see and watch the trauma of childbirth. And then, of course, there's all the responsibilities that follow to care and to nurture, to raise, and to be with your child all the days of your life. Who could ever bear with grace this miraculous thing called bearing a child? Only a woman. And the honorable title that we give to them is mother. That word is a title of honor and respect that we give with deepest of gratitude to all of you who have bared children. Again, I want to read the words of Gail Tsukiyama. Mothers and their children are in a category all their own. There is no bond so strong in the entire world, no love so instantaneous and forgiving. You don't mess with a mother's children. Mothers are bearers. Don't mess with them. And it's true. There's a bond between them and their children that is transcendent. It's a bond that I believe we as men, as fathers, don't have with our children. There is something that happens in the womb and this miracle called life that bonds mothers with their children. There's been times where I've been a little bit upset with Don, and I spoke maybe with a raised tone of voice to have my daughters rise up like lionesses, come to her aid, and basically have me stand down. I'm thinking, wow, there's some bond here going on that I don't really understand, but they don't do that for me, you know? A mother and her children, it's a beautiful thing. The news of Elizabeth's birth, of course, thundered and traveled through the community like a lightning bolt. Verse 58, her neighbors and her relatives heard that the Lord had displayed his great mercy towards her. The one who opens and closes room, she has a child. It's expressed in terms of this, his mercy. Because they were way past their childbearing years. And this was the heart of Elizabeth. And so God granted her wish in the construct of his overall plan of redemption. And it says, and they were rejoicing with her. You can imagine her friends and the joy that they shared with her in that day that she walked out of her home, being hidden for so long, with her baby in her arms. I probably would have said something really stupid like, hey, is that your grandchild? Because she's like, you know, an older woman, right? Anyway, side note, I digress. Verse 59, and it happened that on the eighth day they came to circumcise the child, and they were going to call him Zacharias after his father. But his mother answered and said, no, indeed, he shall be called John. And they said to her, there's no one among your relatives who is called by that name. They're saying, no, you can't do this, Elizabeth. You need to name him in honor of someone in your clan. That was the cultural thing to do. She stood her ground. She said, no, we're not going to do that. And her husband comes to her aid and says, no, Elizabeth's right. His name shall be called John. And this is part of the greatness of Elizabeth once again. She's faithful to the Lord. The Lord said, you shall call his name John. And so she sees that through. She's faithful, she's patient, and she's loyal to God. This is what makes her a role model for women. Women, cultivate your faithfulness in the living God. Be patient. Learn to wait on him. He is good. He can cause all things to turn around for your benefit. Know that he is good. Trust in him. And then be loyal. Be loyal. You serve him and don't let anybody or anything get in your way of your devotion to your Lord and your King. So I want to say again, we honor you today. All of you who are here, those that are watching on our live stream, those that are watching in our uploaded video, you are amazing women. Being a mother is part of the very design of God from the very beginning. It is the fulfillment of the first commission to be fruitful and multiply with God, his image, in our world. From marriage to conception, from birth to raising a child, you are essential to the very plan of God for the saving of humanity and the sizzle of life eternal in the coming new creation. Mothers, we love you. We affirm you. We value you. We will watch over you. Happy Mother's Day. Shabbat Shalom.